Welcome back to Pod TST. My name is Kenneth Arthur. Today I want to talk about Rams Buccaneers, which happens tonight, Monday Night Football. Hopefully you get an opportunity to listen to this before the game. I am publishing it only maybe several hours before it starts, so my apologies there. However, there were episodes last week, and we're trying to get an episode in here this week before the big Thanksgiving holiday, of which I will not be on Turf Show Times later in the week during the holiday. So I wanted to make sure we were talking about the Rams and the NFL a little bit. You know that I've been doing a little bit of something called Antilytics, and today we're going to talk about Pro Football Focus grades really quickly. But before I do that, because I know you most likely would rather hear about the Rams than you would hear me rant about EPA and DVOA and PFF and these sorts of opinions that are disguised as statistics, first, let me talk about the Rams, the Buccaneers, and the upcoming schedule for Los Angeles and why I expect LA to have a pretty good record here by the end of the season, if not at least going into their week 16 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks for what could be the division title and maybe more up for grabs, especially depending on how Monday night goes against the Bucs. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the most difficult team remaining on the schedule besides perhaps the Seattle Seahawks and then the Arizona Cardinals that they have to face twice, do the Rams. So the Rams have seven more games remaining. And hey, who is it to me? Who am I to criticize analytics, quote unquote analytics? It's really a data analysis. It's not really analytics, but who am I to question data analysis when I can't even talk good? Working on things, still trying to learn how to swallow and breathe properly. And it's only taken me nearly 38 years to learn how to swallow, breathe, and to do all those things in succession with talking, as well as grammar is an issue for this writer. But before I get into PFF grades, and I'm going to say that six or seven more times before I get into it, let's talk about the Buccaneers. This could be the toughest game remaining on LA's schedule. One thing is that it is their fifth trip to the East Coast this season already. The good news is in their final six games, four are at home at SoFi Stadium, and the other two are nearby. They only have to travel to Arizona, to Phoenix in week 13 to face the Cardinals, and then they have to travel to Seattle in week 16 on December 27th to face the Seahawks. And if things continue to trend upwards for both of those teams, you're likely to see it flexed to Sunday night, which would mean that not only will the Rams be in primetime, they'll get a few more hours of rest there to face the Seahawks in week 16 if that does happen. And looking ahead at the schedule, I think the Rams have every opportunity to make it happen, even if they do lose on Monday night, which I do think that this is a difficult game for the Rams to win tonight. They have to not just travel across the country, which I'm assuming they already have done that part, but as they get their body clocks set to Florida time, which I believe Florida time is, their noon is 3 in the morning. In Florida, noon is 3 in the morning. So a lot of people think that Eastern Standard Time means 3 hours ahead of the Pacific Standard Time or the West Coast, which I've lived on the West Coast my entire life, notwithstanding a few trips for vacation. Let's see, the longest that I've ever not been on the West Coast was probably when I spent a week in Australia, which I don't really remember that much of it. Nice people, beautiful beaches. But mostly here, I've been on the West Coast, and most people think that 3 hours ahead is how you calculate, but Florida time, they typically wake up in Florida, I think around 9 p.m., which makes 3 a.m. the noon. And so they have to go to Tampa Bay, and if they're playing Tampa Bay at 5 o'clock at night, that means that the good news is that most Buccaneers don't usually wake up for another 3 or 4 hours. So hopefully the Rams are catching them off guard. And Tom Brady, you know, he's still getting used to the new Florida schedule. He spent so many times, so many years and so many seasons up in Boston, where Boston, their noon is 7 a.m. because, and so it's very difficult because they like to get up. That you have to get up super early to catch crab. And that's my favorite. That's actually the motto of Boston. You have to get up early to catch crab. It's something that sort of I know that Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg and Donnie Wahlberg and the person that Mark Wahlberg attacked and I think took out his eye, blinded a guy. You know, I think that guy as well. He's from all these people were from Boston, and they had to learn how to get up early for the crabs. But Tom Brady, he moved because he just felt like him and Rob Gronkowski would just do better as Florida people, and for different reasons. You know, some people move to Florida. You either move to Florida when you're 18 or 80. And Rob Gronkowski has the heart of an 18-year-old. He hopes one day if he matures somewhat. And Tom Brady has the body of an 80-year-old. And so it made sense for their own separate reasons for them to move to Florida, one for retirement, one for late retirement, one for early retirement. And so that's working out. And then Antonio Brown, of course, he was one of the founders of Florida. There was Florida Man 1, which is like if you get the Social Security number 1, and then there was Antonio Brown. He's like Florida Man 2. So he was like the second Florida man, which is really something that I think people get lost when they talk about Antonio Brown. They only talk about the negatives, but they don't talk about how well he exemplifies the Florida man, which, I mean, come on. This is lamestream media. They're just avoiding the truth about these guys. So that's what the Rams have to face in Tampa Bay on Monday night is the Buccaneers. A lot of new players, and what it has amounted to this season, all of those changes the Bucs made after last year when they hired Bruce Arians as the head coach, and they built up that defense with Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, into one that was formidable against the run and improving against the pass last season, and now they continue to be perhaps the best run defense in the NFL, but the pass defense has also gotten better. They've gotten some pass rush. Inside linebacker Devin White has 5 sacks in 10 games, which, you know, that's a second-year player who I don't think we talk about a lot, maybe on the national media's perspective, not because he isn't great, but because Devin White is so young, you know, he hasn't gotten his first like accolade yet in terms of like an all pro or pro bowl, but that's going to change this year. He's definitely going to the pro bowl. He could be a first team all pro. This is the type of player that Devin White seems to be developing into. He's almost got more tackles than he did in all of last year, albeit he did miss 3 games during his rookie season. He had 91 tackles. This year he's got 88 tackles in 10 starts. He's got 5 sacks, which doubles his total from last season. His 9 QB hits and 8 tackles for a loss also double what he had as a rookie last season. So overall, Devin White is a player inside that I don't know that we're talking a lot about, even though he was a high draft pick. You know, he's the 5th overall pick in the draft last year. Guess what? He's doing really well. So they've got Devin White. They've got Shaquille Barrett, who they put the franchise tag on last year. Barrett's not going to have as many sacks as he did a year ago when he had 19 and a half, led the NFL. He's only got 5 this year. So he's looking more in that 6, 7, 8, 9 sack range, which is still making him a pretty good pass rusher to some degree, maybe just not that. That's why they gave him the franchise tag and nobody went out and gave him a long-term contract, or the Bucks did not, and they were not challenged with any suitors or trades. Jason Pierre-Paul, 7.5 sacks in 10 games, 10 QB hits. William Golston is snuck in there with a team-high 14 QB hits. And Sue, the former LA Ram, of course, he has 4 sacks and 12 QB hits in 10 games. So a lot of really notable up front seven players. Lavonte David is still there, of course, and we knew that they had these strengths. They did have a high draft pick on Vita Vea not long ago in 2018, He's been injured. So that's the only really missing piece. And with all that, they had the run defense all set there and then starting to develop that pass rush. But in the secondary is where they got perhaps the most important changeover from where the Bucks were a year ago, which is that cornerback Jamel Dean has developed into one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL, at least this season. You know, sometimes we get these names, they pop up for only 1 year and then they disappear, or they're just fine, and they'll stick around. You know, you can talk about like maybe a guy like Malcolm Butler of the New England Patriots, who was an undrafted free agent and then started to get playing time and got a little bit more notoriety, and then he had the big interception in the Super Bowl, which made him a more of a household name. Obviously, signs a big deal with the Tennessee Titans, and he's had a pretty good career. You know, he's not elite, but he's pretty good. He's out there week to week, and you know, Jamel Dean is a guy who could get that Pro Bowl honor this year, and maybe even an All Pro honor this year, the way he's played. It's just we don't know. You know, it's early in his career. Antoine Winfield Jr. was their second round pick. They're playing him at free safety, and he's played really well. And he'll, you know, he could be getting some rookie accolades and maybe some consideration for a Pro Bowl. Certainly an upgrade at safety and cornerback from what Tampa Bay did have last year. And they do have a lot of weapons, so to speak, on that side of the ball. A lot of talented players, and Todd Bowles has been in the NFL for a long time. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's run a team, and I don't like to overcredit defensive and offensive coordinators, because I think it still comes down to the talent that you have, and it's undeniable how much talent the Bucks have, and to have health and to have certain guys coming together at the right time, because there's going to be years when having Lavonte David and Sue and Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, some of them are going to be past their prime, and some of them are going to be injured, and some of them are going to be too before their prime. And right now, the Tampa Bay has had it all come together at a perfect storm to bring Mark Wahlberg back into the equation here. A bit of a perfect storm over here. That was more of a New York, not even a good New York accent, or not even a 100%. I didn't even give it 100%. But the Bucks do have a lot of talent on that side of the ball, and that's really going to be where the Rams and the Bucks are matching up head-to-head, face-to-face. Mano-a-mano is not always just it's definitely not quarterback versus quarterback, and it's not defense versus defense, but really, which defense shuts down the opposing offense better on Monday night could come out to be why we get the result that we end up getting on Monday night, because both offenses have strengths and weaknesses, and sort of these star players who have not really put up the numbers individually that they could, maybe even in a different offense or with fewer weapons around them, or with certain matchups, and maybe they've faced tougher schedules of defenses, and there's just weeks when they don't turn out. But, you know, this is Tom Brady and the pros and cons that come with Tom Brady at the age of 43 in, you know, his 20th NFL season as a starter, and then Jared Goff and the pros and cons that come with Jared Goff, who is, you know, much younger than Tom Brady, but certainly has just not proven to have that sort of elite skill set, whether it is physically, mentally, everything put together. I mean, Tom Brady is in a small group of quarterbacks, and then Jared Goff is young, and maybe he will one day put it all together in such a way, like a Ryan Tannehill, who I understand too. Like, Ryan Tannehill is in a very good situation, I think, for a quarterback and for Ryan Tannehill, and he's in the right area. But there, still, his numbers and what he's able to do for the Titans has clearly improved over what he was able to do for Adam Gase and the Miami Dolphins. And Sean McVay is no Adam Gase. So I expect him to be able to get more out of Jared Goff if Jared Goff is willing and able to give him more. Unfortunately, I think that there are, you know, that's where the Rams would like to take that next step above, is to say, now the Rams have this quarterback who will elevate the players around him rather than necessarily just getting elevated by those around him. Is he doing the elevation or not? At this point, it's just you don't see as much of that from Goff, and going up against the Bucks defense, that could be an issue. And they are playing Joseph Nopum at left tackle, with Andrew Whitworth having a torn MCL and potentially being out for the rest of the season. It's a little bit less, though. I don't worry that much about the loss of Andrew Whitworth. I was on the NFL SB Nation show this morning. Unfortunately, I think that audio file went missing or lost or didn't get into the can. Or maybe I was just, speaking of can, maybe I was just trash and it didn't make it through. But what I was saying there was, as much as Andrew Whitworth is one of the Rams' best players, one of their top five players, if not maybe their best player on offense all around, I don't worry that much about the loss of Andrew Whitworth. The Rams are as healthy as they've been all year long. Those players that are hurt or on injured reserve, those players, you know, who, when there aren't any question marks going into Monday night with who's healthy and who's not healthy, every player is available if they're on the active roster. And that includes players like Terrell Lewis and Jordan Fuller and A'shaun Robinson and Joseph Nopum and Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson and Tyler Higbee, all guys who have been hurt this year or injured and missed games or missed lots of games, and they're all available. So I would say that the Rams are in as good a position as most any NFL team can hope to be health-wise at this juncture. And the fact is, like, if Jared Goff has any skill at all, it's getting rid of the ball quickly, avoiding sacks. And what you don't want to see is him avoiding sacks to run himself into an interception or a turnover. Or, you know, that's what we don't want to see from Jared Goff. And I don't think that, you know, Nopum plays well enough for me to think that that won't be as much of an issue. And running the football, you know, they've successfully been able to run that football off the right side. They've been successfully able to run the football up the middle. The Rams are one of the most successful rushing teams in the league, and Andrew Whitworth has something to do with that, but so does Sean McVay and Henderson and Malcolm Brown and sometimes Cam Akers and Jared Goff and Robert Woods. Like, there are reasons that I am not as worried about Whitworth's injury as you might be, given how good Andrew Whitworth is and how valuable he's been to the Rams since 2017. But there's other reasons I think that I would have confidence in that. However, the Bucs are just going to have a really good defense. It's going to be harder for the Rams to be able to run the football, which is something that they knew they were running into against teams like the Giants and the football team that have better run defenses. Even the Seahawks, you know, they have a pretty good run defense, do the Seahawks, and that gets lost in how bad their pass defense has been for most of the year. But the LA Rams were able to get off 106 rushing yards in their win last week against Seattle. They've been able to run for over 100 yards in all but one game this season, which was against the Giants when they had 58 rushing yards, and they did only score 17 points that week. But if you eliminate the run as an option, or, you know, a big rushing, explosive rushing as an option against the Bucks on Monday night, what are you left with for the Rams? That's where maybe it comes in. Like, can they either do something that most teams have not been able to do against Tampa Bay? Also, their run defense has been a little bit worse in the last few weeks. You know, they gave up 138 rushing yards to the Saints 2 weeks ago, which was a season high. It's interesting, you know, but they've held all but the Saints to 101 or fewer rushing yards this season. That's where LA would like to change things up and show that they can run the football against a team like Tampa Bay. And then that's where they will get more options here for Jared Goff in the passing game. We would like to see Cooper Kupp be a bit more efficient, protect the football, catch the football, no drops. We would like to see the Rams be able to stretch the field offensively. Can they connect to Josh Reynolds down the field? Can they get Van Jefferson involved as a downfield threat or as a threat at all? Can they add Cam Akers as a rushing threat, as a receiving threat? Can they add that as a weapon? You know, it's your second round pick, the first pick that they made. It would be nice to see Cam Akers be able to have some involvement there. But either or, it does seem like LA has to lean on another fantastic defensive performance to win this game on Monday night. Another thing is that the Rams have turned the ball over in 9 out of 9 games. And when they turn the ball over more than one time, they're 0-2. So protect the football, run the football. We know that the defense is strong, and they want to be able to force Tampa Bay into some turnovers, which has happened a few times this year. They had 3 turnovers against the Saints in week 1. They had 3 turnovers against the Saints in week 9. They lost both of those games by double digits, getting blown out in 1. If the Rams can win the turnover battle, force Tom Brady into, you know, some mistakes. Tom Brady is throwing the football a lot. He was leading the NFL in pass attempts not long ago. He's right near the top of the NFL leaders in pass attempts. So trying to get Tom Brady to throw an interception or two. He's got 4 fumbles. Ronald Jones has a couple fumbles. Just finding any way at all possible to protect the football and then hope that the game turns by forcing a turnover or 2. But defensively, these are 2 of the best defenses in the NFL, maybe even number 1 and number 2, and number 2 of the top 3 with the, you know, the Steelers getting in some involvement. I think that the Rams are definitely being underrated as a defense, and so are the Saints. You know, so it's like they can play Saints type of defense against Tampa Bay, just like New Orleans did, which is one of my favorite ways that New Orleans plays is like the Saints. If the Saints can continue to play like New Orleans, they'll be fine. But the Rams can also play like the Saints defensively. That'll be their best chance on Monday night here, I think, against the Bucs, because it'll be difficult for the Jared Goff offense. Come on. I mean, he has the name Goff. You knew you were setting us up for mouth jumbles when we were talking about football, playing offense, all that kind of stuff. But Jared Goff's offense being able to move the ball against the Bucs will be interesting to try to watch tonight and to see them attempt the ways that they'll do that. We know that Sean McVay has to be able to get creative and figure something out to make a change here. And also expecting that it has to come down to Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Troy Hill, Darius Williams, Leonard Floyd, Terrell Lewis, A'shaun Robinson, Michael Brockers. Did I say Jordan Fuller already? John Johnson, Micah Kizer, all these guys playing their role to create those opportunities to stop the Bucs on third down. You know, this season the Rams rank 4th in third down defense. So to be able to stop Tampa Bay on their third downs, where they rank 15th on third down offense and 13th on third down defense, this is really where LA can maybe get an advantage and get a win on Monday night. And if they get a win on Monday night, they move to 7-3. They move up to the number 2 seed in the NFC, just 1 game behind the Saints, who will be starting Taysom Hill at quarterback for at least another couple of games. And I think Taysom Hill, no matter what his stats say, looked fine at best. His long pass to Emmanuel Sanders that went, I think, 44 or 46 yards was ugly, was one of the worst long passes I've ever seen in my life. Should not have been caught, and was just bad defense, or at least just lucky, you know, because it was so in the wrong place for the ball to be thrown that it was like, if anyone's here, it's a miracle. And then someone was there, it was Sanders, and he came down with the catch. Taysom Hill looked not very good. Is he a dual threat running back? Can he throw the ball? Like, he technically can throw the ball. He's got one of the best, if not the best, offensive coach in the NFL, overseeing everything here with Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael, the offensive coordinator, and how long they've been doing that with Drew Brees. And they've been able to transfer some of that to Teddy Bridgewater last season. They were able to go 5-0 when Bridgewater was starting. And now they're 1-0 here with Taysom Hill as a starter. So clearly they've got a formula figured out, and I wouldn't count out New Orleans, but that's potentially a team here that could take a loss. So if the Rams win, they will move up to 7-3. And then they've got teams that they can beat. The 49ers at home, the Cardinals on the road, the Patriots at home, and the Jets at home. They can go 4-0 against that slate. And if they can beat the Bucs, that's 5-0. They'll be 11-3 going into week 16 against the Seattle Seahawks. And then week 17 at home against the Cardinals. I think that the Rams have a real opportunity to be 11-3 going into that Seattle game. We know that they can beat the Seahawks. You know, they've been successful against the Seahawks, 9-4 with Aaron Donald against the Seattle Seahawks. So we know that the Rams can be successful against the Seahawks, and we know that that means that they have an opportunity maybe to, you know, win out. They beat the Bucks, they can win out, and then that's enough for the number one seed probably. But first job would be beating Tampa Bay. I do think this will be a difficult game for the Rams to win. However, if they do win it, it says a lot. It tells us a lot about them. I did tease something about PSF grades. So even though I've already been talking and ranting for quite a long time, and again, not very good at controlling my breath, my breathing, my saliva intake, and all that kind of stuff. So as fast as I talk, I can't imagine how difficult this experience could be for some people, some listeners out there, most of whom probably turned it off a long time ago. You're still here. That's impressive. You could probably withstand all kinds of torture. And that's something that I think, at the very least, if you tell someone about this podcast, tell them, like, I withstood the torture of listening to Kenneth Arthur rant without breathing in for 30 almost minutes. It's impressive, and you should praise yourself. I know that Moby wants to praise you like he should. So that's something that I want everyone to take to the Bank of America. By the way, my Bank of America credit card number is 6842-3667. So use that number for nothing. It's guys, I don't even know what you would be able to do with a bank number, but I'm not giving it out. So stop asking, okay? Stop asking. I know. I'm very wealthy. One of these days, I want to, you know, and I want to, if anyone's out there listening and we're talking about wealth in the NFL, why is Quinnen Williams doing comedy in a Tide ad? I'm out here in LA. I know a ton of actors who just lost restaurant jobs and much more. So why did we need to get another ad with Peyton Manning, who won't go away, who will continue to tell us, you know, we're still being fed this idea that Peyton Manning needs to sell us every product. Peyton Manning, when is enough? When is enough enough? Doesn't a person strive to make such a grand living financially as Peyton Manning did for 20 years in the league? Don't you strive for that so that you don't have to hawk Tide? So you don't have to sell stuff? I understand that it's such an easy, probably 100,000, a million, 5 million, whatever it is. It's probably so easy to just go in there and get the, and I understand, but doesn't anybody work that hard so that they can spend more time with their family and doing things besides working for Tide? Is there something else to be done? And could we not give those jobs and opportunities to the people who did not make any money this year because they would go out on audition after audition after audition? And I mean, I have said nothing but as a person who auditioned 15 times for commercials and stunk every time and does not deserve a Tide ad, but I know a lot of people who do, who could have done it, as well as Quinnen Williams, who, by the way, did a really fine, acceptable job. It makes me wonder why I had so much of spent so much money on my quote-unquote comedy education. I don't think you can really call the UCB a comedy theater anymore. But the fact that you could be out there and all that time that people spent, and it goes to this guy who plays for the Jets. Perfectly fine, great young player. I can't imagine anybody who was needed to be pushed into buying Tide is doing so because of Quinnen Williams, let alone Peyton Manning, but Quinnen Williams. Where else could that job have gone to? This is a different, by the way, Quinnen Williams probably has a really good PFF grade. So transitioning quickly to PFF grades, you know, obviously on Antilytics, I talk just a little bit more about not necessarily even trying to take down analytics or to talk down about it, or, you know, to say there are plenty of things that we could say are wrong with a lot of these websites and numbers. There's plenty. And that really the point is being able to have these conversations, like the fact that, you know, DVOA and EPA and FPI, all of these things are formulas developed by humans who had an opinion on what they believed efficiency was. All of these things are developed by humans on what they believed a point was worth. All of these things are based on what people say. So just because it comes out of a computer or a calculator doesn't mean that a sophisticated robot was able to tell us without a shadow of a doubt what a player was worth or what a play was worth or what a throw was worth or what a run was worth or the pass is worth more than a run or that this was the right decision and this was the wrong decision, that you should 100% of the time go for it on fourth and one and on this field and not punt it. Why? Because 18 years ago, Kerry Collins was playing a game against the Buffalo Bills, and that's being calculated in such a way that now it should tell you that percentage-wise, based on thousands of plays that didn't have to do with tonight, it means that, Sean McVay should go for it in this exact situation and these exact circumstances in Tampa Bay against the, Tom Brady's Bucs. I mean, that's kind of a complicated and maybe not the most cohesive and clear way to put it, but let's just be very clear that all of these formulas come from humans. But there's things that we don't need, to rely on someone else's opinion to spit out a number that doesn't really tell us anything other than, hey, here's if you took yards and touchdowns and interceptions and you mashed them together and created a new number, this is what it would be. Or I also just had the yards and the touchdowns, the interceptions, and I'll look at that and I'll, watch the player and I'll decide for myself. Unfortunately, it's difficult to do that because there are so many players in football, 22 on the field at any given time on these plays, maybe 23 if you're the Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders. But that's where it's getting down to the point of just why we needed some website like Pro Football Focus to tell us the grade of an offensive lineman. Well, because most of us just don't have A, the know-how, or B, the time to sit down and watch every offensive lineman on every play. What I don't quite understand or believe is that PFF has somebody sit down and watch every offensive lineman on every single play. I don't really believe they do that for every player, and I don't even know logistically how they would explain how they do it if they watch each play 44 times so that they can count or each play 22 times so that they count 11 players on offense and say, okay, now I'm watching the left tackle. Okay, he did this. Now I'm watching the left guard. Okay, he did this. I mean, I guess you could watch it 11 times and say you watched the left tackle and you watched maybe he's defended by the edge player. And so you're saying, okay, I'm judging those two guys on this and he gets a one and he gets a negative one. So that's one aspect, is to believe that one person, who, by the way, is probably either an unpaid intern or a college kid making minimum wage and just loves football and would do anything for the opportunity to work at PFF or work anywhere in the NFL field, which I understand, I would do the same. I love covering the sport as much as anything in my life, so I understand what that's like. At the same time, do you trust the opinion of every single person who loves football? This is what you are doing, is when you look at a PFF grade, you're trusting the opinion of that college kid who would just do anything for, the minimum wage to watch a game and just simply track it and give points out to players immediately. I mean, that's the other thing, is that PFF's grades are now, because you can't come out with something 2-3 days later. It's too late. The NFL news cycle is too fast. The Twitter world is too fast. You cannot sit there and say, oh man, it's Tuesday morning, it's Wednesday morning. Like the way that Football Outsiders is behind because of DVOA doesn't get released until Tuesday. They would love for that to be immediate, but that's not the case. And PFF says, hey, look, we got to get this out immediately. So when they give Jalen Ramsey a 55.2 or whatever it was, a week ago against the Seattle Seahawks when he was covering DK Metcalf, and we saw that Metcalf ran, what, 32 routes, and he was targeted 2 times, and he didn't have any catches. This is all against Jalen Ramsey. And then he had some other catches against, like, had a couple other catches against not Jalen Ramsey. That we can say, how did PFF grade Jalen Ramsey before L22 footage came out? How did they do that? Now, there are, like, Zebra technologies. You can have, like, next-gen stats. There are things where players do have – they're tracked on the field, and literally the play, it's almost like a electronic football board where the players are moving around on the board, and you can see exactly where everyone is at any given time at all the times. And that's probably a way to quickly track things without all 22 footage. So what are we saying there, though? If PFF did have access to that, which I don't know that they do, but even if they did, is that something that you're trusting now, that Jalen Ramsey, a dot on a dot, is enough to say when Jalen Ramsey couldn't cover DK Metcalf and when he could? And an imaginary throw to DK Metcalf that never happened that said, well, he was open here, he should have been thrown to. An imaginary throw that never happened. We're now trusting that college kid to tell me what that's worth on a grade. We're trusting that college kid or that unpaid intern or, you know, that guy who just wanted to work his or her way up the ladder at PFF or whatever. Just, yeah, look, you track all these games. We've got 256 regular season games per year. PFF has to put out, you know, they have to have enough interns for that 256 games a year. And then you got to track every single player on every single play. How many people working on this do they have? What's their criteria that they all, because they all have a uniform criteria. There's no, you know, there's not supposed to be that much leeway to say, hey, look, if this happens, then it's a 1 point. If this happens, it's a 2 points. If this happens, it's 3 points. And if this happens, it's -1, -2, and -3. And then they just do that for the whole game. And I've talked to these people. I've talked to people who do this grading system. And I'll tell you, they didn't give me that much confidence in talking to them in the grading system. I didn't feel, you know, they weren't spouting it off as like, hey, if anything, they said, like, yeah, actually the offensive line is one of their better gradeds, is that they do a job of. Which means that there's things that they, even people that work there, don't think they do a good job of grading. And I, you know, so they can have their system for grading cornerbacks, but it's still their system. It's still their opinion. Now, I believe that, you know, PFF has done a masterful job of marketing itself as a reputable and end-all be-all system for grading players, especially because, you know, just they just had something for offensive linemen, which most people just don't know about. And I think including the people at, you know, a lot of people tracking games at PFF. But it's just being able to sit there and say, like, hey, look, we don't know that. We don't have any way of judging. People just don't know what to do with offensive linemen. They'd like to. They have fantasy teams. They can follow sacks and interceptions and tackles and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing for offensive linemen other than, like, just being like reputation, word of mouth, Pro Bowls, all pros, this kind of thing. Well, at a certain point, people just wanted numbers and stats and quote unquote analytics, data analysis, and there wasn't anything there for offensive linemen. But even that, it's just like, so you got that, but then how do we come down to the grades for, you know, the cornerbacks that come out right after the game without all 22 footage or the safeties or anything, you know, where it's pure judgment calls. And it all started with an opinion, but they did a masterful job at marketing it, getting, however they got Chris Collinsworth involved and saying, hey, look, you invest here and we give you this and that, so that they could get on NBC, on Sunday Night Football, putting out PFF grades under the players and saying, like, this and that is something we found here at PFF. And it's smart. It's great. I think also they could have a team of people who are posting on Reddit, upvoting on Reddit, downvoting anyone that questions grades on Reddit, reposting, posting all the time on Twitter, just like a flood of tweets, a PFF for every team, a PFF for different cities and colleges, and just putting out all these Twitter accounts and having people say it, because as long as someone's saying something good about the players on your team, especially if it's like, hey, look, here's a PFF grade for this pass rusher that maybe is underrated, this nickel cornerback, this right guard, anything that makes people feel good about the players on their team or bad about players on other teams is enough to say, like, great. I don't care where the number came from. I don't care if it came from just one college, got a senior at Syracuse who loves the orange, is a big Jimmy Boeheim fan, also, just likes... he likes rooting for Deshaun Watson, and his first favorite player was Peyton Barber for some reason. And his dad works at Enron, if they're still around. Probably not, eh? But maybe he did used to work for Enron, and this is him like trying to, start his own Enron. And that's where we get to PFF. See how this all comes full circle, and I connect everything? Isn't it unfortunate that I spent so much money on a commute education and I'm not funny? It all comes down to there, and that's how you get a PFF grade. Somebody said that, Rob Havenstein was a 71.6 today, and that means something because nobody else said anything about Rob Havenstein. So retweet, and post it up on Reddit, and upvote, and if anyone goes like, hey, who did this number come from, and why do I care what 71.6 means? It doesn't mean anything. It's a made-up number. It's like a Madden grade. Like, Madden grades, what is a Madden grade? Nothing. And then but that's PFF. I mean, that's the same thing. So no matter what the PFF grades come out on Monday night, and they'll be coming out on Monday night. They'll be out there on Tuesday morning. Here's all the PFF grades from the game, and people will be sharing it and pretending like this. They've made PFF grades ubiquitous with analysis, and it's just not. It's just someone somewhere that you never meet doing a system that you don't get to know, that it all comes out and it spits out a number that doesn't have any meaning. But that's where we were at with the please information, please now, society. So that's just a little thoughts about PFF and, about the NFL as the Rams take on the Buccaneers on Monday night. I better wrap this up, so there's some chance that at least, a dozen of you can listen to this before the game. Not that it really matters. Maybe someone will listen to this after the game, and hopefully the Rams won and are 7-3 with their final six games, because I think that they have a real good shot at least winning 4 or 5 of those 6 games, if not the whole lot. So that's it for this episode of Pod TST. I'll be back again soon enough.